my name is Dan Spencer. I'm one of the summer program coordinators here at Holden this summer. I want to welcome you to the first of our forums this week. The topic is listed on the board here, the environmental crisis. Should care for the creation be on the church's front burner? The whole topic or area of environmental crisis has been much in the news in the last few years, and we're hearing a lot of things about things like the ozone layer and global warming. And there has been, increasingly, the conversation has been moving into the churches as well. It's reflected, I think, a little bit that Holden has chosen as its summer theme this year, On Earth as in Heaven, a way for us to begin to make connections between our faith and in concern for the earth. But within that general area of concern, there is a wide variety of opinion and debate about what kind of priority the environmental crisis should take within the church's agenda. The church is faced with many different questions, and for those in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, much of the preoccupation over the last few years has been with just getting the merged church off the ground. So within that broader framework, we want to pose the question about where in the church's agenda the environmental crisis should fit. And to help us get that conversation started, we have three folks joining me on the panel tonight. I will be moderating. But to my right is Al Pitcher, and to my far right, to my immediate right, is Kathy Blomker, and to my left is Dick Blomker. And each of them has agreed to address a somewhat different area in some opening comments to help us get the conversation going. Let me just briefly introduce them. Al has been the scholar in residence here at Holden for the past year, and he has made the center of his focus during that time the environmental crisis and talking to us about that, particularly focusing on the problems of global warming and the ozone layer. And he's going to talk a little bit tonight about different periods in the church's history of where the church has focused on different areas and what Al thinks we're in, what period we're currently in. Kathy and Dick are here on teaching staff for a couple weeks, helping us focus on stewardship issues and care for the creation. And Kathy has a background and works in science education at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Especially in the area of environmental teacher education. It's going to help us look at drawing on science as a resource within the church for confronting the environmental crisis. And Dick is a pastor in Madison, Wisconsin, and heads up the Justice and Care for the Earth Task Force of the South Central Wisconsin Synod, and is going to help us focus on what are the resources already available within our church tradition and heritage to help us confront the problem. So we're going to begin with these opening comments and then throw it out to all of us to get the conversation going about what is the problem, what's the nature of it, and what priority it should take within the church's agenda. With that, I think I'll turn it over to Al to get us started.
One way to look at church history is to ask, what's the central concern and question that's in the minds of people in the life of a whole civilization or culture? And one periodization of church history has placed the problem of death, that's the problem of our own individual lives, the fate that somehow overtakes us without our control, and the death that overtakes us, so that the church's central question in the early period of the church was, what do you do with death? What do you do with fate? And the answer, of course, is that in God, God takes care of your anxiety about dying. Then we come to the period of the Reformation, and the central question in the Reformation was the problem of guilt. I mean, we probably all heard that Luther's great concern about how to deal with guilt and the condemnation of the law, the sense that the law was simply a damning kind of destructive reality because it caused guilt. It makes you feel guilty, as Luther said. You know, there's no way to really do what we're supposed to be, so how do we live with this? Well, then grace, the notion of grace, and the grace that is given us as Jesus Christ takes the guilt upon ourselves. So this Christ actually the substitutionary notion of Christ taking the guilt, our guilt upon himself in order that it isn't held against us, and then we're free to be, free to be. And then the problem, the modern problem with the death of God is the problem of whether there's any meaning at all in life, with the rise of science and the questioning about the whole Christian interpretation, the problem of meaning came in. And I think we're in a different period. I think we have a different question today. And the question we face is the continued existence of the whole foundation for human existence. Not only human existence, for all life. It's a new question. Never, except for the nuclear bombs, and that's part of our whole modern situation, have we faced the possibility, except perhaps with the flood and the story of Noah. Nowhere in the history of the life of the church, except as I say for the story of the flood, have we faced that possibility. So in a sense, we are at the place where Noah was, where what God is saying to us through the destruction of nature is that you in your sin have destroyed my world, my creation. You're destroying it. And I promised not to send another flood, but I have not promised not to let that destruction go a long, long way until you get on your knees and come to your senses about the whole shebang that you're about as my people, in your unfaithfulness, in your separation from creation, in your separation from each other, 40,000 people dying yesterday, today and tomorrow. You've separated yourself from the children of God and from me. And therefore, this is a different kind of a situation which we have to address as if the very being of the future of life is at stake. And so it creates a new condition, a new question, a new imperative for the Christian church.
Kathy.
It is my belief that science, that is, learning about the cosmos and how the cosmos works, is one way of coming to know God. And it disturbs me to hear science and scientists disparaged. Every now and then I'll hear a comment, even here with scientists like Alan and Rudy Edmond and Gertrude and people like this who contribute to our lives so much through their science. Oh, science, or the objectivity of science, or this isn't science, this is, you know, this is something better. And that disturbs me. The church has, all through history, except for a few points along the way, had a notable mistrust of science. In fact, it's only 2 or 3 years ago, I believe, that the Roman Catholic Church finally officially declared the sun to be the center of the solar system and absolved Galileo of heresy. This was what, 1987 or something like that? Amazing. Isaac Newton is only one example of a scientist who devoted his entire life to finding out the mind of God through astronomy and through his studies of gravity. This is how the scientist sought God. Science to me is a spiritual language. I'm not a particle physicist, but I've read enough about it to know that when you get into quantum mechanics, you find only mystery. There's no way to explain the way certain particles behave by the logical, rational explanations that we tend to give things. It's mystery. And quantum physicists who are deeply into their work are kind of quiet about this, but they feel this mystery. Do you know what drives most scientists in the deep of their deepest selves? Awe and wonder. Awe and wonder. Certainly not money. This is what they come. They come to find out how this works. Some scientists may be Christian. Some are very strong Christians. Some are not. But we, as Christians, and all people, are the recipients of this wonderful knowledge and theory of the cosmos. And it helps us understand how God works in creation. Scientists unfold creation for us. In order for us as Christians to respond effectively to the environmental crisis, I believe that we have to know something about the environment. It seems kind of simplistic, but unless we know something about soils and water erosion, or about the atmosphere and the ozone layer, about the way molecules work with one another, how can we possibly do anything to solve the problem? If you've become more aware of an issue such as rainforest destruction, if you care a little bit more than you did before, it's because the scientists have informed us about what is happening, about the fact that a tree is an oxygen factory. I believe that our churches should be filled with science books, filled at all levels, in the grade school, in the children's Sunday school, and in the adult level. Our libraries, how many of your church libraries have science books in them? Good, that's wonderful. That's not enough. Our adult classes should be periodically, at least, science-oriented, if not regularly, as an alternative to another set of sessions. In order to understand, in order to care for the creation, which I believe we are called to do, we've got to understand it more.
Thanks, Kathy.
Nick. Well, I want to make the simple statement that I really believe, and there are those who disagree with this, but I and despair over it and want to simply drop Christianity altogether and reinvent religion almost to speak to the issue. I really believe that we have within our Christian tradition all the tools, the theological and biblical tools that we need to deal with this issue. But as it is, as I think Al mentioned, a lack of emphasis that has really put us in a situation where we're not positioned really well right now to deal with the issue, and we really need to rethink our responses and to look within our tradition and just see what all of those tools are. We've taken a very traditional, and I think we can keep it quite frankly, a motif of looking at our faith in terms of the creation, the fall, and redemption. But the problem with that is that we have, I think, look at the fall and redemption almost exclusively in dealing with another historical period, as Lutherans at least, in dealing with guilt. So we ask, what is it to have our sins forgiven? Well, it's to have our guilt removed. I'm not sure we as Lutherans dealt with a more recent period of finding meaning in life as well as some of the other traditions have. And so we've looked at that motif of creation, fall, and redemption in really a very narrow sense without asking some more broader and basic questions, you know. We have within our tradition, for example, the creation stories all the way through the Old Testament, but in Genesis, some words that are troubling that can be redeemed and have some wonderful value. To have dominion, for example, which is a bad word for translation, simply means in the Hebrew to keep everything within its rightful place in creation. And to be created in the image of God is to understand that all of life is related, and that this is how God creates and how God places us within the creation. That's to image God, you know, and the wonderful, wonderful tools within the creation story itself. I don't know if you were at Dan Erlander's presentation today, but he was talking about, can we recapture an understanding of the historical Jesus? And in many ways, we've reduced our understanding of who Jesus is to this person who comes, the divine becoming human, to forgive my sins so I can go to heaven. You know, I mean, that's, but there's more to the tradition and the biblical tradition of understanding Jesus than that. And the real issue, and I went to a lecture that Larry Rasmussen gave in Madison a year ago in September, and I thought he phrased it so well. He said the real issue for us as Christians today is to have a fuller faith. It's one thing to believe and have faith in Jesus who comes to forgive my sins and to give me eternal life. That's the Jesus who deals with the weak side of me, my sinful side, my dark side. But what about having a more complete faith that really believes that Jesus not only forgives us, but empowers us to become children of God, as we say in the beginning of our worship services every Sunday, and really believing that so much that we believe that Jesus empowers us and gifts us to become part of the redemption of all of creation. Now that's power. And that power comes from God. Can we trust God that much to believe that God is actually doing that? It's a wonderful way of looking at the faith in a more complete way. And when you start thinking that way, you know, you can start asking some questions. You know, well, what about creation then? Don't we Christians also have a right to talk about creation just like other religions do? Why must we always go to, as wonderful as they are, why must we go to the traditions of other faiths to talk about creation? Why can't we go to our own tradition? And even in talking about the fall, can't we ask the question, well, what did we fall from? You know, what is the creation that we fell from? How do we understand creation? And with that, in understanding the fall, how do we understand sin? What do we really mean by sin today? I don't think a lot of us really think about that, you know. It's more than being absolved from some personal guilt, some things that we've done. Dr. Cal DeWitt at the University of Wisconsin, in one class in environmental concerns, asked his class to spend a couple of hours just evaluating what were the root causes of the environmental crisis today. And those students came back and they gave three words: arrogance, ignorance, and greed. Now, isn't that wonderful? What if we started naming sin in that way and then dealing with it? You know, our arrogance as human beings, our choice to be ignorant and not listening to the sciences and understanding the creation as we are called to do, and our greed at consumption, you know, it's just, you know, we need to start, and that's within our tradition. It's within the prophetic tradition, certainly of the Old Testament. And then we could talk about, what is salvation then? Isn't it more than having my personal sins forgiven, my guilt absolved, so I can go to heaven? Doesn't it also include the restoration of all of creation, the reconciliation of all things? We can look at the Jesus of Colossians, where we read that he's reconciling all things, and that wonderful news that in Jesus all things are holding together. You know, there is just so much there. Two other quick points. One is, maybe we could start looking at the church, the body of Christ, a little bit differently too. I went to a series of lectures at LSTC last March on caring for the earth, where some theologians really were wrestling with this. And they wrote some wonderful papers, Lutherans and Presbyterians. But as I was driving home, I thought, you know, this is really not the church. These are theologians dealing with the issues. What about the whole church? If the church is the whole body of Christ, doesn't that include the scientists? Doesn't that include all of us in our giftedness to begin dialoguing about this issue? It's not just an issue for the theologians and the biblical scholars. It's an issue for the scientists within our congregations, the whole body of Christ. And I thought, putting it into a faith stance, I thought Larry Rasmussen said it really well in a paper he wrote. He talks about, well, if we really, really want to be like Jesus, and I think this is one of the things that some Lutherans are really afraid of, is that some of the folks who are writing about this really do kind of lose Jesus, and I think there's an issue there. But I don't think it happens. If we really deal with this properly, you know, we find that Jesus is a very earthy human being. You know, this is God in the flesh. And to be like Jesus, as Larry Rasmussen says, as it says in John 3:16, if we want to be like Jesus, we'll once again fall in love with the earth and we'll care for it the way we're called to. So.
Great, thank you, Dick. Well, just in summary then, I think we got some talking points to begin from. Dick has reminded us that we don't need to leave our own Christian tradition in order to have resources to confront the crisis. And Kathy has reminded us that we've got a wealth of resources coming from science that helps us to do this and not to set that aside as we deal with it from a church perspective. And Al has, I think, laid a framework from at least one perspective, and probably, if I'm hearing you right, Al, would make the claim that the environmental crisis, environmental issue, is not just one issue among many, but is really the issue that confronts the church at this particular time in the church's history. And maybe we can use that as our point of departure now to start talking together, to hear what we all think about this. I remind you that Holden Forums are set up as not to try and reach any kind of consensus necessarily, but to hear from a variety of perspectives and to get each other, us talking to each other, to create conversation opportunities for the rest of the week as well. So feel free to agree or disagree as you're so inclined with what you've heard here and what we say to each other. And I will try and moderate the conversation in that. What do you all think in terms of what you've heard or what your own thoughts are? Yes?
I got to tell you, I'm really disappointed in the forum tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me you've got three people who have strongly answered that particular question with a yes. And it seems you've either got a panel, the right panel and the wrong question, or the right question and the wrong panel. If you use the analogy of a front burner, how many burners do you have? You got four, generally, two in front and two in back. You know, where are the questions of what, if you only have two, or make it three or four, make it whatever you want to. How many front burners are there, and what are the issues that should be on those front burners?
Well, do you want to offer some, or do you have any perspective on that? Or?
Well, the healthcare crisis is one.
Okay.
You can name them.
Mm-hmm.
I have 19 of them.
I thought there would be that kind of a discussion. What are the major issues, and should an environmental crisis be one of the major issues?
Well, I think it has to be the major issue. Now, if you've got another one you want to put up there, you put them up.
The healthcare crisis would be one major one. Whose
healthcare crisis?
I'll begin with ours in this country alone.
Well, you mean the healthcare crisis of the poor, or the healthcare crisis of the middle class, or
of the country, of our U.S. of A.
Of people.
Yeah, to begin with, where are we? Or, you know, if you want to define church, you're talking like my congregation, the nation, whatever. If you're going to talk, I assume the nation. And therefore, I would throw the healthcare crisis of the nation as a major issue
today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one more. I think that's helpful, because I've certainly heard in lots of different conversations, some people say, no, the problem of global poverty really needs to be the issue for the church. Other people say, no, evangelism needs to be the primary focus of the church. And what we're trying to do tonight is to raise the question of the environmental crisis in the context of some of these others. I think it's fine for us to bring them up, And if the panel didn't do that, we can do that among each other. But I appreciate you bringing that up, and we can start to get at that question.
Yeah. I'm going to throw two things out. One is, unfortunately, the Soil Conservation Service, Department of Ag, has had an ongoing program in 50 states trying to get congregations at least to do it one Sunday a year to settle in on soil stewardship. And the city congregations, I never heard about that when I was in the city. When I got in the country, fortunately, the SCS man from our county sat in the second pew and said, "Pastor, you will." That's good, because all the churches did it in that area. Now we've changed the lectionary, so you can't do it. You got to work it in somewhere. And that's too bad. But the other thing, I think the main problem is not the ozone level. I think the main problem is stewardship. I really do. Like all the healthcare problem and all the rest of it, we got such a milquetoast idea of stewardship in the ELCA that if we were asked to do anything special, half of our congregation would leave, and so would half of yours. Because what's the church trying to do? Get our money now?
Can you define just what you mean by stewardship?
Yeah, I think, well, I've got a farm congregation, and I've told my parishioners, one of them, who just invested about $3,000 in some new plow, because every 7 years, he's got to plow the field because all the stuff is compact, and he finally is beginning to realize it ain't the way to farm. But he laid out the $3,000. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. And they talked with me, and I said, you know, it seems to me if this farm isn't better when you get done with it, then you better get off of it right now. Just close it up. And they kind of looked at me cross-eyed because they're making good money. I said, I don't care about the money. I care about the ground. You're responsible for that, just as you are with your backyard garden. But look at the way we take care of it. We throw all these chemicals into the ground under the assumption it's going to raise more. Well, it does. That's true. But in the process, it takes a heck of a toll on the ground. And if you live in a rural area, you start looking real closely. Some of the crops are not as hot as their farmer thinks they are. And then, you know, then you see the boxcar coming in or the covered hopper with all of its 45 or 55 ton of phosphate, we'll throw it out there. You know, it's like in Wisconsin. Wisconsin doesn't take me as being a religious state, but I was up there when they told the paper mills. They started up at Rhinelander, went right down the Wisconsin River. Clean up, close up, one or the other. And a couple of the paper companies said we'll close up, and the state said, fine. None of them closed up. Now you can go fishing in the Wisconsin River all the way down. It's been cleaned up. The same thing is true in the Fox River Valley. And they squat. Kleenex was going to move. They said, go ahead, we'll help you. Pack, goodbye. They never moved. They invested in equipment that the water's cleaner now than when they get it.
So do I understand that you're saying that we should expand our traditional knowledge of stewardship?
I think so. And include all this in it. Mm-hmm. I think we have a stewardship responsibility to the ozone level and everything else we do. You know, you just can't keep not having any responsibility for the gifts that God has given us. And go with what your husband said. Get into the Psalms. Man, they're always talking about playing in the mud and the dirt, how great it is.
Well, I think we'd agree with you. The question is, how do we get our local congregations to pay attention to what God is saying to us through what's happening in nature, through the pollutions, through the ozone, through the global warming, through all the toxic waste that are being spewed out, through all the things we're buying which mean that we're spewing off the carbon dioxide? What do we do? What are you doing in your congregation to broaden their appreciation for what's happening in the creation? And Kathy has said, and I agree with her, we got to listen. We've got to have classes. We got to read this stuff. We've got to pray about it. We've got to cuss each other out about it a little.
Be honest. We got to start being honest.
We got to have a conversation in the local church.
I have a friend of mine, and he and I dialogue all the time. We finally got to the point now in 2 years that last couple of months we've been talking a great deal about getting back to Mother Earth. And when he first brought it up, I thought he was out of his tree. And the more I think about it, the more I think about what you say today, I think we need to get a good handful of dirt in our hand. We need to play with it a while. And we need to take some breaths of fresh air and not just assume that the next air is going to be fresh. You know, as long as everything is going along well, it's like, I go back to Wisconsin. Some of those towns, when they were not clean, man, you could smell them 30 miles away on a wrong day. And that hydrogen sulfide, it just drive you right up a wall. I mean, and the whole town stunk. But it showed the paper mill was working. And that meant jobs. So that's the other, it's a trade-off. But they found out they could clear the air up. It cost money, and they did it. And they cleaned up the water at the same time. And I really believe that we in the church are so afraid to get the scientists to talk to us for fear they're going to say something we can't accept, or they're going to stand for what they believe to be true.
The other thing is that we tend, when we invite people to come to us, and this is just parenthetical, to get Christians. We don't have to, you know, my aunt had a information to those who are Christian that we limit ourselves unnecessarily, I think.
Roxy, is he out of hand?
Yeah, I was thinking historically, 20 years ago when I was thinking about the church and this whole question and working in environmental things all the time and have consistently for over 20 years, we just found that was not a subject you could discuss because we're supposed to use this stuff and it's here for our use and we have the right to it. And that attitude prevails to this day, and I think we have to climb over that historically, and there's a lot of scripture given out along those lines. If you go back and read the stuff that was written 20 years ago on what we should do, and that was when there was this big environmental crisis. There was no gas, and you know, and the 60s were just getting over with, and people were starting to wake up. Only we didn't wake up. We went fast asleep for 20 years. That was our lag time. And now we're in it. And so, I mean, I think Al's right. If we don't get greening of everything we do, our jobs, our economic situation in the whole country, and if we don't do it now, we're done. We've had it.
Dick, did you want to?
The other thing I want to say, and pulling the person back here who was talking about health care and other issues, is that in dealing with this, especially the last 5 or 6 years myself, in studying it, it's lifted my sensitivity and my concern for other issues within the church. And I think if I were to be critical of the Lutheran Church, it is that we still have trouble with dealing with what we call social issues. But I think if we do that within the whole context of caring for the creation, then all of these issues naturally fall in, and they fall under that umbrella, and we begin to encompass all of them, and in their own right time, too. And it gives us a larger context, which is one reason I would really argue for that. It's not, and I would strongly argue, we're not talking about humans versus nature. We're talking about the whole creation, which includes human beings, I think. And I really want to make that understood, and I sort of feel like we pushed you out a while ago, and I don't mean that at all. I think it puts it into a wonderful perspective.
Dan, I think, just a minute, wait, he's still, I think you have something that you want to say.
I can't see him, so. I can't hear you, I'm sorry, what?
I'd love to, but I don't want to monopolize. Go ahead, there's a lot of other people here that want to talk to.
All right, well, feel free, I can't see you, so feel free if you've got... got something to say, to stick your hand up.
Isn't our topic tonight to do with the environment?
Yes.
Well, what is health care to do with environment?
No, it's...
Go ahead.
The major thrust of the American Lung Association, you know, the Christmas seal people, used to be tuberculosis. Now it is air pollution. A great deal of the health care crisis is bad air, bad water, bad food. And particularly in other areas of the world who have never had clean, drinkable water. So many of the issues, poverty, degradation of the land and the water and the forests and the soil and the air, and the fact that so much heavier burden of environmental problems rests upon the poor, whether they're in the inner cities or the devastated rural areas. I think that all of these other really major concerns are intertwined with this one.
Okay, there's a hand here.
Thank you. The question was brought up of how do we do this in the churches, how do we bring this concern up, and I think an important part of the process is having these forums where discussions are had, and including some education about how we can discuss and disagree and still be open to each other. I think that's very important, and one of the examples that comes to my mind is there's some black groups in South Africa who are, this group is against apartheid and this group is against apartheid, but they're warring with each other because they don't agree about other things. But if they could just get together and discuss things, they would move forward, but they don't have the history of discussing things and sharing their differences and saying, this is what I think, this is what I think, and let's find some common ground, or let's at least be open to each other and not automatically shut down. So I value this forum, and I think that if we took something like this into our churches and said, we can disagree, I mean, we don't have to convert each other right here and now. You know, this doesn't have to be everybody all signing up on one side. But discussion is very important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Eric?
Well, the question I'd like to ask everyone is just quite simply, what is the church about? The church is a national body and our congregation. I think in one way of looking at it is that we're very inwardly turned. Evangelism is something that it's a concept or something. And what I want to get to, Carl Broughton says that what the church does and does best is preaching the gospel. And that all these other activities that social activists get involved in are other people do those things better. And that we should let those people do those things. But the way I see it is, for one thing, other people are not doing it. That Ronald Reagan was saying in the middle of the 80s that he was looking forward to, he was looking for the churches and other people to do things towards the homeless. And we did. And the church picked up where the government is not. If you look around now and you're gathering information on different, if you're trying to gather information on what to do to have a response to the environmental crisis, you will not find anything from the federal government. Most of the writings are being done by private organizations. Okay, and if you look around and you try to find something from the church on what to do as a response to the environmental crisis, well, you won't find anything from ELCA. ELCA had the first meeting of Eco Justice Task Force this last April. That's another funny thing about the ELCA is that we're not putting out anything. We've got our 6-year study on the nature of God, and our 6-year study on ministry, and our 5-year study on seminaries. And that is all we're doing. And I think that's, you know, pretty high price to pay for a murder. If we would have known that the church would drop leadership in all these different areas, that we would have no leadership, national leadership in areas of ethics, would we have been so willing for a merger? I just had a class in ethics at the seminary, and it was a class in African-American theological ethics, and our assignment was to take Lutheran position papers and compare those to what was being taught and preached in the black church in America. And what we had to do was go back and take ALC and LCA position papers from what I was working on. I was working things that were written in 1976. The church does not provide us, is not now, does not seem to me to be providing this leadership in this. So what are we about the national church? Okay, now, and what is your congregation doing about this stuff? There are a few scattered congregations that are doing things like setting up a recycling program in the neighborhood. And if that congregation in that neighborhood did not do it, it might not have gotten done. Many municipalities have not done this, and it says 20 years we've known about this stuff. So what are we about? Are we going to, I see it, Matthew 25, when Jesus says, when you fed, when you clothed, and when you visited in the prison, you did that for me. And I think that is a mandate with just as much weight as the Great Commission in Matthew 28. I think we're told to go out and do these things. And Jesus didn't say, go to your elected official and get these things done. But I would really like to hear from people what they think. What is the church about? Are we mainly to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, that Jesus died for your sins? Is that our specialty, and should we say this? Or are we to get involved in what we know needs to be done in caring for creation?
Sometimes, for what it's worth, when I was ordained to preach the gospel, administer the sacrament, and does not say anything about sitting in a confounded office writing that ballsy newsletter. It says nothing about diddling along trying to get the ladies' aid off there to do something. It says preach the gospel, administer the sacraments, and that's about the only thing a congregation can do if you're not doing. They can't, they have a hard time on that one. They get you for not sending out the newsletter on time because they all get it late. It seems to me one of the things, I back to stewardship again, this is in my craw. I think one of the things with most of us in the pulpit is we're so busy doing all this other foolishness that when it comes to Sunday morning, we go hide with the liturgy. I got a new trick I'm going to pull today, folks. We're going to learn a new hymn, Hot Dog. So the sermon gets cut back to 10 minutes. Great. If you read some of the old pastors, and I got a couple of their books, if that old Norsky got done in 45 minutes on Sunday morning, the furnace had to go out, and it was 40 below zero in North Dakota. He never got done less than 45 minutes, because every one of his sermons is 26 and 27 pages long. And when I get done reading them, I'm tired. I don't know what the people were like, but I'm tired. But that guy, he preached. And I think one of the things that I sense from the church is that, and my daughter says, and she's got a PhD in nuclear chemistry, and that's another story we don't need to get into. But she says, she says, when I go to church, Dad, I might as well watch the Pittsburgh streetcars go by. It's about the same thrill. She says, I go to hear something. She says, I get more Christianity out of my professor when we talk about my paper. He asked me, he'll get into what I'm writing on my paper, and he'll say, well, what about your faith, Kathy? Is there anything to say here? Anything apply to what you believe as religious beliefs? And then she says, then I have to work on it. But I think preaching the gospel may be the answer to the problem. But preaching the gospel means we become involved in this stuff, but preaching is first.
Let's ask some of the others here. There's a hand here, and it's about what's happening in your own congregation.
Well, I'm not a Lutheran. I'm a United Methodist.
Oh, well, you can leave.
Yay. Right. We have a solar hot water heater on the roof of our church, and we've been recycling for years. I'm trying to make connections that are real hard for me to make, but part of it is when you talk about preaching the gospel, and in the earlier discussion about nature, talking about dominion and the mistranslation of dominion. Well, I think that there's some connections there. I think that part of the reason your daughter doesn't get meaning when she goes to a church is that there may be some problems with the language. Since I was never baptized, it's hard to say that I left the church when I was a teenager, but I do remember reading when I was a teenager some of the stuff written by some of the bishops of the Dark Ages, and St. Augustine, we all know, some of the negative things he had to say about sexuality, among other things. And I think that there are some connections between nature and sexuality and the environmental crisis. And I think part of it is a lack of respect for physical reality and the beauty of it and the responsibility we have for it. And so I think that there are connections between, well, for one thing, one ironic note is that the U.S. Defense Department is one of the worst environmental polluters in the country. There was a program on NOVA about that a couple of years ago. Their record is horrendous. We have all these defense contractors who are making all this money off the government, and they charge extra for disposing of waste, but if we don't pay them enough extra, they dispose of it illegally. I mean, some of these problems are just, they're just spirals within spirals. So, and I think language has to do with it. For me, I could come back to a church where I could say to a female minister that I had trouble with the Bible because it was very sexist, and she could agree with me. And she could say, look at the story of Ruth. Look at some of the women in the Bible. And then we could start not letting language get in the way. I mean, there's some people, when you say sin, it turns them off. What is sin? It's important to know what sin is. My definition of sin is turning away from God. Pretty simple. But those are some questions that I think need to be integrated and worked on.
One thing I'm hearing from several people is that there is, we both have the resources and lack the resources in terms of our own tradition or the theology that informs our responses, whether it's preaching the gospel or the way people are hearing things, that impedes us from addressing some of the questions we're finding, and yet the resources are there if we can turn to them. And I'm curious, in following up some of what Eric was saying as well, it's helpful to hear from the United Methodist perspective, at least your own church. But what are people finding in your own congregations, your own faith communities, the ways to be addressing the environmental crisis? If so, how is that happening? If not, why do you think that's not happening?
Well, being that we as Lutherans take so much from Martin Luther's dogmatics, did Martin Luther ever write anything? He was such a prolific writer. Did he ever write anything about ecology or about stewardship for the earth?
Well, they wrote about planting the tree.
Yeah, there's that one question that was raised to him where he was asked, what should I be doing if I know that the world is coming to an end tomorrow? And he said, well, what I would want God to find me doing would be to be in my backyard planting a tree. Taking care of the creation.
And another thing we have to remember is that the context is very different. Our environment is very different now than it was in Luther's day. And while there was a lot of exploitation going on, and there has been for many thousands of years, it hadn't gotten to the point that we see is now critical.
I think we're avoiding the issue as to whether our situation is fundamentally different today from what it's been for the last 2,000 years.
Well, people have always gotten sick from pollution. I mean, some of the major
advances
of civilization.
But global warming is not a little bit of pollution that you can get a few dollars and clean up a site. Global warming is affecting the whole future ozone depletion is affecting, and species depletion. You're affecting the whole future of the physical, chemical, biological basis for human life. And the question is whether this is the same or different. And if it's not the same, then it seems to me we have to we have to really look twice at what we are. I can't buy very much anymore, really, because everything you buy uses energy, and every bit of energy puts carbon in the air and creates global warming. And we don't know the climatic effects of global warming. From my point of view, we are in a different situation. That's why it seems to me you've got to decide whether your interpretation of what's happening in history is that God is saying something very, very different from what God has been saying to us, or at least much more drastically. He's saying no to most of what you and I do every day, I think. This is not just an ordinary situation. Sure, we can go and, I don't know what we're going to do with Hanford. Nobody knows what we're going to do with Hanford. That's of the same character. We don't know what to do with those nuclear wastes. We never should have created nuclear power.
Well, we need to confront some of those scientists on the mixture. They were creating the atom bomb, and they were doing good things with the atom, and they need to help us, and we need to help them, because the scientists are never going to take on the ethical questions. That's not part of their job.
You can clean up.
I disagree with that.
You can clean up a few things. I don't put the scientists aren't to blame. I mean, we're to blame. Let's say we are the culprits, I would say. We are the culprits.
Right.
Because it's our wishes.
Yeah.
In our system of government, and in our system of economics, it's our wishes that determine what's produced and what's done.
Even coming to understand how it all fits together. For example, when I was in a second-hand shop and I was looking at a sheared lamb jacket, and a woman beside me was disgusted that I would consider wearing dead animal furs, but when I thought about the oil spill in Alaska and how many animals died an agonizing death because we had to have oil. I mean, you're right about the transportation. And we're going in the wrong direction. We have more transportation done by trucks now than we have done by railroads, and the trucks are four times worse in terms of the amount of pollution produced.
I'm just trying to get us on the track of whether or not we are in a crucial situation where the environmental issues, and they're very broad, they include all population explosion, third world economic development, our whole economic policy, our whole theory, and they include so many things as a factor in this destruction of the creation. In fact, the question is whether the destruction or care of the creation, it should really assume a place in our thinking that gives it a priority and an urgency, and we should somehow push some other things in the background. I've been spending my life on affirmative action and on problems of poverty, but now this seems like it should have a priority for me. You know, I've made my decision. This is where the issue is for the next 10 to 20 years, and we jolly well better attend to it as churches if we want to have any validity at all in God's sight.
Hey, there was a hand up here and then one back here.
Well, I guess just as a practicing scientist for 35 years or more, I always kind of react when people start saying that scientists do not think about ethical issues and it's strictly a scientific response that is totally amoral. That's maybe what you said, but I kind of react when people kind of move in that direction, because I think all of those issues that we're talking about affect us as well as it does anybody else. And I think we may or may not be causing it as scientists, but we also have, I think, some options for possible solutions for some of these. And in the long run, one of these may very well be atomic energy or variation of that. Yeah, there are difficulties with it, tremendous difficulties, but so is there in burning coal. Yep. And lots of other types of
energy sources that we use as considered to be better than that, they may or may not be better in the long run. There's all kinds of interactive things taking place there that we don't have all the answers for at this point in time. We may not for some period, a long period of time.
Let me just ask from your perspective, how would you respond to what Al is saying? Is this a particularly critical time now? Is the situation different in terms of the scale of the global crisis on environmental?
Well, certainly, it becomes a major issue. I have no qualm with me about that at all. Albeit, pollution has been a problem for the ages. If you wanted to have pollution, would we try to have the same number of horsepower that we have in the actual horse? We'd have pollution that you wouldn't know how to get around at all. But yet, because of the numbers of the people and the amount of energy that we are consuming and expending every day, the problem does become very, very difficult, and I don't know exactly what the answer is. We're always looking for. I expect most of us, somehow or other, drove here, at least drove as far as Chelan or Field Point Landing. Not too many of us walk, and so we're all expending energy one way or another. Global warming? I don't know. It's over the eons, it's gone up and down and up and down. I know in Minnesota last summer and the summer before, everybody was blaming global warming because it was so hot and dry. This year, we're about 15 inches above normal in rain and hardly had a day above 90 all summer. So these are large issues that you have to look at over tremendous amounts of time. And not all scientists would agree that the global warming is a phenomenon that doesn't go in some big cycle.
Thanks. Hands back here.
I guess for me, getting back to the basic question here, should the creation be on the front burner of the church's agenda? I don't think it's going to work very well for the church or for anyone to deal with the effect we're having on creation. In the session that Stuart Taylor had just before dinner tonight, we listed, and this thing on St. Francis, we listed the things on the blackboard that we're doing to the creation, all the way from the greenhouse effect to acid rain to wetlands, no wetlands anymore. And we had a couple of columns of significant problems. And most of them we came down to feeling were due to mankind not knowing our place in creation, and it really comes down to greed. And it occurs to me as we talk about how to clean up the environment that the issue that really needs to be addressed is economics and greed. And it struck me last week when we talked about homophobia around here that there's people on a rampage about trying to find the biblical basis for being down on homosexuality, and the basis for it is oblique at best, and none of it came from Jesus. When you look at the economics that's preached in the New Testament about wealth, much of which came from Jesus, that's really, nobody's on a rampage about that. And we're in a situation where that's, our pulpits are silent. And the parables that have to do with the distribution of wealth are skipped over in our country. And we're in a rampage doing that at the Rock now, but you have to realize, we're 2% of the world's, of the oil-consuming world, and consuming 40% of the oil. That's the problem. He's not the problem. And nobody's saying anything about that in church. I think economics of Jesus are not being preached in the courts. I'm not sure if we follow the economics of Jesus, or we ease up on creation.
Ann, did you want to?
Well, in a way, this is what happens when you live together, you sort of think the same. But I think, I was thinking too that the unique role I think the church could play would be to draw some of these issues together from a faith perspective. Barry Commoner has been on public radio recently talking about what Al is talking about that the best environmental effort is never to create things that you have to deal with. And I think you don't create the toxins, you don't create the toxic waste, you don't create the extra things to buy like Al was talking about. But that's the best prevention of all. And I think that does go back to the greed issue and the materialism that's sucking the life from our society. And I think it also addresses the third world issue, the issues of us victimizing other societies. And so I think the church is really in a good position from a biblical base to draw all those things together and make sense out of it for people from a perspective of faith and the economics of Jesus and the to criticize materialism, to criticize treating other societies as just sources for our greed, you know, the whole thing. It kind of all fits together. And that could be a,
I'd have to say that in the state of Wisconsin, we've had a case in the last year where a large percentage of the populace went along with a lot of provisions on a recycling bill, such as product bans and mandatory recycling and deposits and a lot of things. The people wanted it. The lobbyists for the paper companies and the other industries were effective in voting these provisions out of the bill. So it isn't as easy as just getting the people to agree, unfortunately.
We're about at the end of our time. Bill, did you want
to? Well, I wanted to return to Al's question as to whether this is a new dimension. And I can think of two somewhat parallel eras, perhaps. One was the period of the Black Death in Europe in Middle Ages, where the majority of the population in many places had died, and there was the very real fear of the extinction of humanity, but there was no understanding whatsoever of the cause or the means of preventing it.